You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
New research is claiming that New Zealand has one of the most distorted tax environments for housing of any country in the OECD. Dr. Andrew Coleman, an affiliate of Motu Economic and Public Policy Research, argues that had tax policy been different, the country might not be seeing the housing crisis currently in effect. BFM reporter Shamina Smith spoke with Dr. Coleman earlier this week, starting with a breakdown of the tax problems we're currently facing.
Started back in 1988. Before then, New Zealand, like most other countries, allowed you to put money into retirement savings accounts, such as KiwiSaver. But when you did that, the money was not taxed when you earned it. So if you earned $50,000 and put $10,000 into your retirement savings account, you just paid tax on the $40,000. And then as the money accumulated in your account, it wasn't taxed either. But when you got to withdraw at age 65 or so, then you paid tax on the whole sum at that point. And that's called, it's got a funny name, it's an expenditure tax approach to retirement savings accounts, and it's quite standard in many countries around the world. In the United States, for instance, it's a 401k system, and Britain does it. Lots and lots of OECD countries do it. So we had that until 1988, and then the government of the day said, oh, this is favouring rich people because they put most of the money into retirement savings accounts. Let's scrap it, and so that any money you put in a retirement savings account is taxed immediately, like any other money you earn, and then any interest and dividends that you earn, that's taxed too. But when you get it out, it's all your money and you don't pay tax on it. So they changed that system. And they were going to do at the same time introduce a capital gains tax on other assets, including housing, but that bit didn't get introduced, so they just changed the retirement savings system.
And so was it true that that tax change, or that tax that they wanted to change, that it did favour rich people?
Well, clearly higher income people are putting more money into the account, and so yes, in some sense it does favour rich people. But it's not that it's the tax, it's not that this money was never taxed, it was that it was taxed at the end rather than at the beginning. But that was the idea, and it was certainly true that higher income people put more money into these retirement accounts than low income people. That may be less true now, but KiwiSaver is quite popular across the board. What was the reason for doing it, for making the change?
And so then, so that change back in 1989, how does that then connect to the current housing crisis that we're seeing now?
That's the thing that was never thought through back then. So in most countries, again, the government tries to make sure that the tax treatment for your own occupied house is similar to the tax treatment of other assets that you can buy. So that when it gets to the choice of the size of the house that you want to buy, the tax laws aren't favouring you to make you buy a bigger house or a house in a nicer location versus, say, investing in money in a bank or otherwise. And the way that they've made in most countries that decision neutral, so that there's no tax advantage to your to the house that you have, is to tax retirement savings accounts on the same basis as your house. So that when you're deciding whether to, you know, get that extra 20 square metre house or to pay an extra $100,000 to live in a nicer location, the cost to you is thinking, oh, if I don't buy the bigger house, I can put the money in an account which is taxed in a similar way to housing. Now, at the moment, that's what we changed in New Zealand, because we took away that option. And that means that when people are making those decisions, they are saying, oh, shall I buy a bigger house or a nicer house, or shall I invest the money and have to pay a lot of tax on it? And it's that extra tax that they pay if they invest their money in other things that then favours buying bigger houses and paying more for houses in nice locations. And that sounds like a subtle change, but that's really how our tax system now differs from the system around most countries in the world, not Australia, but most other countries, is that when it comes to buying a house, we have a tax advantage to buy a bigger house or a better located house because everything else that we do with our money is taxed.
Right. So, okay. So let me just recap what you've said there. Basically, this tax change now, the current sort of impact of that, it sort of makes people motivated to invest their savings into purchasing a home which has certain tax advantages as opposed to perhaps other means of investment or saving.
That's exactly right. Can I give you a parallel?
Sure.
Suppose we had a petrol tax, but the government decided that we'd only going to tax two-wheel drive, small two-wheel drive cars rather than big four-wheel drive cars. Okay? So, and it was $1 a litre. Now, we introduced this petrol tax only on small cars, and you're pretty clear what's going to happen is that people are going to think, oh boy, I'll get a bigger car, I'll get a four-wheel drive. And so even though you haven't changed the tax on the four-wheel drives, you've made them more attractive because you're taxing the two-wheel drives on petrol. And you can imagine what's going to happen there. Firstly, the sales of four-wheel drives will go up, and secondly, the price of second-hand four-wheel drives will go up. Okay, and that's sort of what's happened with housing. We didn't change what we taxed housing, but we put a big tax on retirement savings, which was the only other asset class that was taxed in the same way as housing. And then suddenly you'd expect people to buy bigger houses or spend more on purchasing second-hand houses. Mm. And that's sort of what I figure we have seen. Mm. Is that parallel good?
Yes, no, that totally makes sense. And so the impact of this then, that people were kind of using houses as a method of investment and saving, that then artificially drives up the costs of houses, right?
Right. So it does, but we need to be a little clear here. Mm. It drives up the size of the house, that's the construction bit,
yeah,
that you would buy, because that's relatively cheaper, and it drives up the price of land. So it has two different effects. Mm. One is bigger houses, and the other is the land becomes more expensive. And that's because, if you want to live in a nice part of town, well, everyone suddenly wants to live in a nicer part of town. Mm. Because it's tax advantaged, and that drives up the price there.
And so what do you see as being the way, the best way to approach this in terms of a solution?
Well, there's sort of two solutions. If you go back to my example with the two-wheel car and the four-wheel car, what you want to do is have the tax rate on them the same. And you can either do that by raising the tax on four-wheel drives so that it's the same as on two-wheel drives, or you can do it by reducing the tax on two-wheel drives. So the solution to making the tax rates the same, one way would be to have a capital gains tax on owner-occupied housing. And also, you'd want to tax what we call the imputed rent, or the rent you pay yourself if you own your own home. So that's one way, and that will then make the tax system on housing the same as the tax system on retirement savings and other assets in the economy. But you can see that that's not politically popular. And so my suggestion is, and this is really just saying, well, this is what the rest of the world is doing, is instead of raising taxes on housing, we can lower taxes on retirement savings back to the same basis that housing is taxed on.
Right, so you think there could potentially be more political support for that move as opposed to something like a capital gains tax?
Well, given that we've had talk about capital gains taxes in New Zealand for 25 years and nothing has come about it, I would say yes, it's far more likely to be politically sustainable. And in fact, that's the overseas evidence. This is a standard tax arrangement around the world. Britain had a big tax review by two Nobel Prize winners 5 or 6 years ago. They recommended increasing the range of assets that you can put into these retirement savings classes at this different tax system. So it is politically sustainable from what we've seen around the rest of the world, and it may be the solution to what we've now got as a wedge between the way we tax housing and the way we tax other assets. It does still mean there will be other tax wedges in the economy because other things will be taxed at a different rate than retirement savings, but that's been part of the solution around the rest of the world. And it does seem to be.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me this morning.
I just say one extra thing?
Oh, absolutely. Go for it.
This isn't a short-term solution. You know, it's sort of like it's a lot easier to jump off a train than climb back on it. And it's a solution that would eventually get rid of the problem, maybe over a 25-year period, as more and more people get allowed into these retirement savings accounts. So it wouldn't be an overnight solution, but it's a thing that if we don't do something about it, even if we fix the other issues surrounding housing, might be immigration or it might be urban limits, but even if we fix those, the tax distortion will still remain. Mm. And so it's a case of, well, we need to get rid of the tax distortion so that there isn't the artificially high prices which are affecting young people, even though that won't happen overnight and it won't have big effects overnight. It's sort of a more a long-term solution.
The French, for instance, love the cock.
You're tuned into The Wire.
Yes, you are tuned into The Wire. Now, earlier this week, the Department of Conservation announced a draft plan on protecting threatened species. BFM reporter Katie Doyle caught up with Forest and Birds Advocacy Manager Kevin Hackwell for more.
What does the term threatened species encompass?
Well, it encompasses any species that is actually in decline and is threatened literally. With the idea of a threat is it's threatened with extinction if it carries on the way it's going. That's the issue. It identifies it as a potential candidate for going into extinction.
And what are some of the threats to these species currently?
Well, the big one for a lot of the species is predators, introduced predators. So, rats and stoats, possums, cats, feral cats, that sort of stuff. So that's a big part of the problem. But also a really big part is, particularly on private land, is having their habitats destroyed in various ways. So either you have landowners, farmers and others destroying the habitat, so they can plant grass or build houses, whatever. Or you might have situations, for example, open cast coal mining, which just completely nukes the landscape, there's the habitat that's there. So things like that. So a lot of our species, our threatened species, are actually on private land, not on conservation land. And for them, a lot of the threats, apart from things like predators, is habitat destruction. Someone's developing something and not taking any notice of the wildlife that's there.
So with the fact that it is private land, how would you go about conserving it, considering it's not owned publicly?
But it is owned publicly. That's actually the point. You don't own the tui that lands in your backyard. In fact, if you were to kill it, you'd be immediately up in court because the tui is a protected species and it is owned by the people of New Zealand. So the people of New Zealand, the Crown, own our biodiversity in that sort of way. And so you don't have an automatic right to destroy these things. And so, yes, these things live on private land, but actually they are commonly owned, and there is a responsibility under the Resource Management Act to protect those species and their habitats. And the Department of Conservation has been given the role, it's a government department, to advocate for their protection on behalf of the government and the people of New Zealand. And that's one of the issues that we have, is that unfortunately the Department of Conservation under this government has pulled back from doing its job of advocating for the protection of biodiversity on private land. It used to do a lot. It used to do a lot of work on the RMA, trying to get good rules into the plans, making submissions on resource consents that were going to destroy habitat, that sort of thing. It hasn't been doing much of that at all in the last 8 years, and that's a real worry.
And so how should they go about doing this more?
Well, today we've had the launch of the new threatened species strategy from the Department of Conservation and the Minister of Conservation. And there's a lot of good stuff in there. Targets for managing, so many, they want to be actively managing 500 threatened species by 2025 and 600 by 2030. They're not bad targets. They probably could be more ambitious. They do talk about, doing bits and pieces, but the big issue is having the resources to do the work. And that means the Department of Conservation needs to be properly funded. The Department of Conservation needs to have the government say to it, no, go out there and do your job of advocating for biodiversity, not only on public land but also on private land, which is, you know, something that they've done in the past and they should do. And also what needs to happen is the government needs to actually change its really myopic, sort of narrowly focused drive to have its sort of business growth agenda, which, so you've got various government departments busy pushing policies that lead to the destruction of habitat, lead to species becoming endangered. For example, Ministry of Primary Industries, they have a $400 million irrigation fund for irrigation dams. And, of course, it's the irrigation dams that dam the rivers, lead to intensive agriculture, which leads to pollution in the rivers, which means that we lose, you know, we have a whole pile of freshwater species that are going, you know, are threatened and endangered, going to extinction. You know, we shouldn't be spending that money on uneconomic dams that then causes the problems. We have LIMS, Land Information New Zealand. It's a department that manages nearly 2 million hectares of high country and river beds, and it does hardly anything for the conservation values there, and often allows people to destroy habitat. The government should be saying to them, hey, you've got to change that. You've got Ministry of Business and Innovation and Employment, which is busy promoting things like open cast mining, coal mining in the Buller, which will push a whole pile of species that are only found there to extinction. The government's just got to get more balance in what it does. Key thing is the government's got to commit the resources. The government came out just today and said that they had a $1.5 billion surplus for the first 9 months of this year. Given that amount of money, there's no excuse whatsoever for the continued underfunding of the Department of Conservation and the really crucial work that it does. New Zealanders, we call ourselves Kiwis, our threatened species. We really relate to our environment. We know how unique so much of New Zealand's environment and the species that are found only here in New Zealand. We know how important they are. We love them. We use them to advertise our clean green, you know, for tourism, for our products, etc. We really identify with our environment, and it's time we had the government spending, you know, the right amount of money to protect it. And if we've got a $1.5 billion surplus, then there's no excuse for the Department of Conservation getting one half of 1% of the total government budget. That's just pathetic.
So around, you know, up to
8,000 or 10,000. Shit.
The Wire.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.